Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We continue with our series with NCAA leaders, and joining me today is co-offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at the University of Northern Iowa, John Bond. Coach, it's great to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Coach, you guys did a great job this year as a team and on offense, and the statistical area where you guys led the nation was in red zone offense. We'll get into that a little bit more. Before we do that, Coach, let's talk a little bit about your background in coaching. You were sharing with me, you know, that you kind of had a similar background to me, where you grew up the son of a football coach.
I did. I can remember some of my first memories were running around the field in full gear at about 5 years old, running wind sprints with the players and in the locker room back in the day when there used to be salt tablets and vitamin C, getting handfuls of each and running around having a big time. So, yeah, I kind of grew up cutting the grass and, you know, just fell in love with all of it.
Absolutely. I had similar experiences, coaches. For me, it was about being old enough to be down on the sideline during games. I think it was finally, I was 8 years old when my dad finally let that happen, but was always around the practices, always tackling the dummies, wearing the equipment, all those kinds of things. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a great way to grow up. And I really, honestly, in recruiting, I'm a little bit partial to coaches' kids because I know, as you know, when you grow up around it and you hear your dad and his assistant coaches talking ball all the time, and a lot of times those guys are coaches on the field at whatever position they play just because they've grown up around it their entire life.
Yeah, I was talking with the head football coach at Webb City High School in Missouri, John Roderick, and John's, I think, won like 11 state championships there, and he had both of his sons and his nephews, and all of them play for him, were quarterbacks, and we were talking about, you see that quite a bit, geez, you know, at the college level when we get around and recruit, quite a bit at the, you know, around the country at the high school level where the head football coach's son is a quarterback, and it's really not by design, because the coach thinks that, you know, this is the best position for him to play. It's that kid usually is like a sponge and absorbs everything and really understands football at a different level.
There's no question. I can remember as a little kid sitting up in the stands with my mom at the ball games and her asking me about every play, what's he going to call? What's he going to call? So I feel like I've been calling plays since I was about 8, you know. But it's really a great way to grow up, and I'm very fortunate to have been able to be a part of that and grow up like that.
Coach, talk to us a little bit about your background and you know, when you got your start in coaching after you gave up the game as a player, and you know, a little bit about how your career has grown.
Well, I am from Rogers, Arkansas, which is about 18 miles down the road from Fayetteville. So I actually went to University of Arkansas, and Coach Lou Holtz was the head coach there at that time. And I started back then, they had junior varsity teams, so I started on the junior varsity team as a freshman, and then I ended up getting hurt, and for one reason or another, my position coach liked me and asked me if I'd like to help him coach the secondary, because I actually was a quarterback when I went there, and then I got moved to be a safety there at Arkansas, and at first I resisted the idea, I said, no, I want to play, and then I finally figured out, you know, I'm obviously never going to play on Sundays, so maybe the best way to, and I knew I wanted to coach, so, you know, maybe this is the best route for me to go. So, you know, here I was, 19 years old, helping coach guys, you know, 22 and 23 years old. So it was really a great experience. I got to play and be a student assistant for Lou Holtz, and then once he left Arkansas and went to Minnesota, we had a whole different kind of guy come in to be the head coach by the name of Ken Hatfield, who is a totally different in almost every single aspect of how he ran the program and just his personality and, you know, the difference between the two coaches, the way, you know, in their coaching styles was really a huge benefit to me at such a young age, because I was able to watch and learn from two Hall of Fame coaches, you know, right there at the same spot where I was. So I was really fortunate in that aspect of it.
What would you say, you know, maybe a thing you've took away from each of those coaches and that really formed you as a young coach?
Well, Coach Holtz, with, you know, with him is just the attention to detail and the discipline in every aspect of, you know, the players and the program and all that. He's a highly detailed person, and his organization was, you know, in all those areas were second to none. Ken Hatfield was just an unbelievable human being. You know, he allowed no cussing on the field. He sent his coaches home after practice, and it was just a, you know, 180 from the other staff, and just the way Coach Hatfield handled himself and his preparation in his own way is second to none as well. And the offense he ran, he was running the old wishbone back then. And both those guys had a unique way of dealing with people and dealing with their staffs. And I obviously took the best from both, at least in my mind. And it was a great learned experience to be around that.
Coach, in your time in your career, you've had some really good stops along the way. You've been at Georgia Tech. You were the MAC conference at Northern Illinois.
At Northern Illinois, yeah.
Yep. And you were at you know, United States Military Academy. So you've been at some good places, different styles of football at each of those probably. But, you know, you've, as a coordinator, you found a way to, you know, have a team that really was producing well and, you know, statistically performing at the top of, you know, the NCAA divisions that you've been in. What do you attribute those things to?
Oh, you know, honestly, a lot of luck. I've been very fortunate. I've coordinated about every offense you can possibly coordinate. I've actually coordinated the flex bone, the wishbone that kind of turned into the flex bone with a double slot, like Navy and Army and Georgia Tech now run. I've coordinated the I formation. I've coordinated one back offenses. I mean, I've been around a lot of different styles of play, and all of them work, you know, if they're coached right and all that. But really, as far as being successful, I think the biggest part of it is being around good players and good coaches. I mean, it's hard. You can't do it by yourself. So any successes that I've ever had along the way, there have always been good players and really good assistant coaches that have helped out and bought in, and everybody pulling in the same direction. And really, that's, quite honestly, that's the name of the game as far as I'm concerned. You've got to have good players. It doesn't matter how good a coach you are in college. If you don't have good players, you're probably not going to win. And certainly you're not going to win if you have a good quarterback in today's football. So being around good players and good coaches are the secret really to anybody's success, in my opinion.
Coach, I was always a better coach when I had those, you know, 1,000-yard plus running backs on my team. It was funny how those guys made me a better coach.
Yeah, those guys that carry the ball and make tackles and do all those kinds of things as a team, those are the guys that they're the ones that have to go play, and they, you know, they're the ones that have to do it. You can help them get there, but you've got to have good players, and on any level, whether it's in college or the pros or high, you know, the teams that are going to Super Bowls and winning national championships are generally the ones that have the best players, or certainly among the best.
Well, Coach, I know, obviously, and I joke with that saying that, but I know, obviously, good players are important to what we do, but coaching and being a great teacher is part of it as well. And, you know, you certainly have had the opportunity to learn, and you've been in all kinds of different offenses. And, you know, as we look at today's offenses, you know, a lot of RPO, a lot of essentially option, which may take on different forms than what you had done before. But how did all that previous learning kind of blend into what you're doing right now?
You know, honestly, with the experience and all the different offenses that I've been a part of, I think it just gives you a greater appreciation that multiplicity as far as your formations and movements, all those kinds of things, being able to get in different formations but still have a core set of plays and run a lot of different looks, but essentially for the kids, they're doing the same stuff. To me, that's the biggest thing I think that we do well is, you know, Hayden Fry at Iowa, you say his offensive philosophy is scratch where it itches. And that's kind of what I believe. I believe you've got to be able to scratch where it itches. If you've got something that you're seeing on film that they're either not lining up to as well as what maybe they should be, or they have a weakness in a matchup personnel wise, or whatever the case might be, you've got to be multiple enough offensively to be able to attack that and then be able to make in-game adjustments and attack it with, you know, within the game, during the game. So if I had to say, you know, one thing that is very important, that is that's right at the top of the list. You know, some of these guys that, by gosh, they're going to be spread offense, and, you know, come hell or high water, it's like some of these guys are more interested in, you know, the title behind their offense than they are about winning games and scoring points and winning games. And, you know, you've got to adapt your personnel to your people. And number one, in my opinion, you've got to do what your quarterback can do. And if you're in a spread offense that's trying to run a bunch of zone reads and power reads and you know, all that stuff, and you've got to drop back quarterback back there, you're probably not going to be quite as good as what you need to be if you know, maybe you're trying to do something else. So you've got to be able to adapt to what your quarterback does best. And I think the next biggest group offensively is you got to be able to adapt and do what your offensive line does best. So if you kind of take care of those two areas right there and aren't hard-headed and stubborn, and you get your best players on the field regardless of, you know, what position they're playing or what kind of learner they are, all that kind of stuff, finding a way to figure out to get your best 11 out there, I think you'll have a pretty good opportunity to be successful.
Coach, that's an interesting observation with, you know, I guess the nature of our game right now, especially when you look at coordinators, is everybody is out there kind of building their brand, right? They're gonna run a certain type of offense, put these, you know, honestly, concepts together that, you know, have been around for a long time, and then put a catchy name on what their offense is or how they do things, or, you know, hang their hat, for example, on just going fast all the time. That always doesn't serve the team, I think. I think sometimes it'll work, but I think eventually that approach to things maybe is going to hit some bumps in the road. Would you agree?
I agree 100%. You know, I think, again, I think some of these guys are more worried about their brand than they are about scoring points and winning games. I know when I interviewed at Georgia Tech, we'd put it together a run at Northern Illinois 3 straight years where we, you know, we did pretty darn well. You know, we had top 20 offense 3 years in a row, and, you know, I had Garrett Wolf, who led the nation in rushing and finished second 1 year and fifth mm-hmm. the next. And I mean, we were putting up numbers galore, and I finally got an opportunity to interview at a BCS school. And when I interviewed with Chan Gailey at Georgia Tech, you know, who had just had Calvin Johnson and some of those guys at Georgia Tech, one of the first things he asked me that I'll never forget was, he said, "You don't have a name for your offense, do you?" He said, "I'm always suspicious of those guys." And at the time, I didn't have a name, and I, you know, and never have had a name for an offense. But that always struck me, and I kind of, you know, after it was over with, I look back and I'm like, you know what? I understand why he asked that, because some of these guys with their, you know, the names for their offense are more worried about that maybe than they are getting the right kind of kid and molding their offense in order to move the ball and score points. You know, trying to make a kid that's not that type of player into something he's not, and obviously you're not going to have as much success doing that.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing you really got to be cautious of with, you know, taking that approach is that this is a team game. So offense is only one part of it. And, you know, especially for a head coach, you got to coordinate all those things to work together. So, you know, I always prided myself when I was an offensive coordinator on being able to work with a defensive coordinator and understand what his defense needed at a certain point in the game. I was a big believer in the ability to go fast, but not do it at all times, because, hey, they may be struggling. They may need me to control the ball. So I'm going to have to be able to operate that way too. And I think it just goes back to that. This is a team game. All phases got to work together.
There's no question. We got a staff in here this week, and Coach Farley came in our room while we were talking offensive football, and he's just sitting there listening. And, you know, they rushed for almost 200 yards a game, and, you know, he asked them how good their defense was, and he said, our defense led the nation in defense this year. And he said, well, what in the world are you talking about going fast for? He said, you're running the ball for 200 yards a game. Your defense is number one in the country. He said, you don't need more plays. He said, your defense is going to win most of the games for you just by what you just told me. He said, you know, he said, what are you doing here? And it totally took those guys aback. But I mean, you know, just like you said, it's not just about the offense. It's not just about the defense, special teams. I mean, you've got to tie the whole thing together. And I think the best guys out there that are winning the most games have the ability to tie in their philosophies and make them all mesh as one.
Coach, let's dig into the offense a little bit. And, you know, where are you guys right now in all things you can be in offense? Where do you guys kind of find your home as far as what your base is and, you know, your base personnel concepts, et cetera?
Well, I'm asked that all the time, and that kind of goes back to scratch where it itches. If I had to say, I would probably label us a multiple one-back offense. But although we do have two backs that we will play every single game, at some point we'll have two backs, two true backs in the backfield, a fullback and a tailback. But we're mostly a one-back football team that probably – from a percentage standpoint, we're more 11 personnel and 12 personnel, but I'm a big fan of tight ends. I think right now with the emphasis of the spread and, you know, everybody spread out and four wides and five wides and all that stuff going fast and empty and all this and all that, I think tight ends are a differential advantage. And I think that those guys can really allow you to be multiple offensively. And if you have one or two that can split out and do some different things and still come in and be able to block people, I think it's a big advantage for the offense. So we're percentage wise 11, some 12, and just a sprinkling of some other stuff.
Coach, this year, you know, you guys obviously are running one of the top offenses in the nation. You led the nation and FCS schools in the red zone, converting in the red zone, which is not an easy area to operate. In fact, I have quite a few friends who, you know, their best answer to an effective red zone offense is to try to score before they get there, just because it's an area of the field that everything gets condensed and it gets a little bit tougher. The windows are smaller. The timing starts to be a little bit different. So for you, what's the key to excelling in the red zone?
I've always said at clinics that I've spoken at over the years and just talking privately with coaches, I've always said, if you can run the ball, if you're a good naked team and you can throw three step, if you're good at those three things, you're automatically good in the red zone. And I believe that if you can run the football, if you have some nakeds off your run game and you are proficient throwing quick game, that's, you know, because the field's condensed and all that, I think you're well on your way to having a good red zone offense. For us this year, we did a really good job. We didn't do much different, quite honestly. I mean, if people are looking for a bunch of magic plays down there usually and, you know, special plays and all that, we really didn't do much different in the red zone. What we did do is we practiced it. I mean, we walked through it. We practiced it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and we spent time doing it, and they knew exactly what was coming, and we really didn't do anything. I can only think of a couple of plays, really honestly, all year long where we might have drawn one up that looked real fancy on the blackboard that we practiced and put in. But for the most part, we, you know, had four or five core plays, and we repped them all year, and we worked them every single week, and our players knew what was coming, and we made them work. So, you know, that's kind of, there was no magic formula or any magic plays. We just practiced our set, you know, like I said, four or five plays, and they knew what was coming and were able to execute it.
With, you know, looking at how you guys break that up over the course of the week, is that something you're working a little bit every day? Is there certain days that you emphasize that? How does it fit into your practice schedule?
We started on Wednesday. We started on Wednesday with third down and red zone and our skills, and always hit a team period with that. So we were actually in a quote unquote work day. We would hit it. And then we actually went to the, I think Chip Kelly may have started out at Oregon, but we actually went to Thursdays being total walkthrough and kind of revved them back up again Friday. We went to that, and I think that might possibly have been a factor in helping us this year with those aspects, that, you know, the situational football aspects of it, because we're able to practice it Wednesday, we're able to walk it Thursday, and then we're able to practice it again Friday and then go play on Saturday. So I do think there was something to that as far as us being good and being able to score down there when we needed to.
Coach, I know in reading your bio, it mentions that you coach the only quarterback in Division I to have a 70% completion percentage. I think maybe somebody got that this year, but, you know, talk about that. 70% is obviously very high, very proficient. And I look at the time, you know, you did that. It certainly probably wasn't with throwing just a bunch of bubbles all the time. So, you know, what were the things you did to tutor that guy and to get him to be that highly efficient?
Well, if you talk to me, the first question I get asked all the time by quarterback coaches is, what drills do you do? And I'm the most boring guy in America as far as quarterback drills. I see all these Nike drills on the internet, and I hear about these quarterback gurus chasing quarterbacks around with the broom and all that kind of stuff. What I do, what I believe in is footwork. I believe lower body in a quarterback is, I think a good lower body is paramount in your consistency and your accuracy and your power. I believe that your lower body controls all three of those. So I'm a fanatic when it comes to their feet and their footwork. So what I do during practice is we five-step drop, any type of drop that we're going to have during the course of a football game, that's what we do. And if I get a 15-minute individual period, I'm spending 10 on drops. You know, I see guys stepping over dummies and running around cones. I've yet in 31 years ever seen a quarterback step over a body in the pocket to make a throw. Never seen it, ever. But yet these guys are, you know, running around over dummies, taking drops and stepping over, you know, it absolutely has no correlation to what really happens in the football game, in my opinion, at all. So what we do is we drop, and we started practice last year on July the 26th, and we finished on December the 3rd, and on both those days, we were taking drops, so, and every day in between. So that's what I believe in. That's what we do. So, you know, I tell guys right up front, if you're coming to visit me and you're wanting a bunch of fancy drills, you need to go somewhere else, because I don't have them, I don't do them, and I don't believe in them. So that's what we do. And we got that kid, he was really, really good with his feet, and we had a great rushing attack. That was when Garrett Wolf, I believe he finished second in the country that year with one less game than the guy who ended up winning the rushing titles from Memphis. I can't remember his name, but he had one more game and barely beat geared out for the rushing title. We really ran the football well, and it wasn't a bunch of bubbles. You're right. I mean, we were throwing the ball down the field. I mean, we were play action, and it was, you know, intermediate and long balls, but we had such a great rushing attack that we had single coverage all day long. It was almost like running the wishbone, you know, where you're guaranteeing single coverage on your receiver because they had to commit so many guys to stop the run. So he had a great year to start with, but he put a lot of time in, a lot of work, and he bought in, and we've been fortunate that way. We've had a bunch of quarterbacks that have been able to do well, and I attribute a lot of that to the fact that, you know, a great lower body. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we practice.
Now, Coach, I know you probably speak a lot more than just drops, because you wrote a book with Coach's Choice called Developing a Championship Quarterback. So give us a little bit of an overview of that book. I think we'd all be disappointed if we opened page one and it said take drops, the end. So I know you put more into it, Coach. What can we find in that book?
Well, there's a lot in there. I mean, it talks about building relationships with the quarterback. It talks about what kind of guy you're looking for. It talks about the stereotypes of, you know, what some guys think a quarterback has to be. You know, for example, a guy has to be 6'3", 6'4", so he can see over the offensive line. And I'm like, no, that's not true. The best quarterback I ever coached was 5'10". And I last coached him in 1999. He's still playing in Canada. You know, he's thrown right at 53,000 yards.
Wow.
And he might be 5'9". He says he's 5'10". But his name's Kevin Glenn, and he has thrown for right at 53,000 yards. It's the fourth most in the history of the CFL. So, you know, I talk about things that people say you have to have, which, you know, arm strength, you got to have a strong arm. No, you don't. You know, I mean, just a lot of stuff, that myths about quarterbacks. I talk about, you know, what the perception is and what the reality is. We talk about how to watch film. We talk about the mechanics of the drops and the mechanics of how to throw the football and how to watch film. Winter conditioning, the four phases of what a quarterback should be doing in each season of, you know, whether it be spring, summer, winter, fall, all those types of things. I think there are 13 chapters in it, and so it hits on a variety of stuff.
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time with us today and sharing some great ideas. A bit of fresh air to hear some of these things. It's been a while for some of them, so thanks for the information you shared. Thank you for taking the time.
Well, I appreciate you having me. My daughters will and wife and mother will look forward to listening to it.
That's great, Coach. If we have our listeners out there, coaches out there who do want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
Tell you what, Twitter is at Coach John Bond, just JOHNBOND at Coach John Bond, and then email is john.bond@uni.edu.
Great.
Those would probably be the two best ways. Without getting my cell phone out, I'd hate for some of these ladies listening to this broadcast, they'd probably be blowing my phone up. I don't need that.
Yeah, right. Well, Coach, it was great talking with you. Best of luck to you guys in 2018. And again, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.